We'll proceed with the next case of the morning, United States v. Danny Fortner.
Yes.
And you're Mr. Alba?
Yes, Alba.
Okay.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Danny Fortner's sentence was improperly enhanced because the government failed to present evidence that Mr. Fortner actually managed or controlled others. This improper enhancement caused Mr. Fortner's sentence to be approximately 7 years higher than was proper. Mr. Fortner acknowledged to the district court and acknowledges here on appeal that he was involved in drug distribution activities. But Mr. Fortner does not acknowledge that he managed or controlled others, nor does he acknowledge that his mere participation in the supply chain, including supplying others who were sellers of drugs, is sufficient to show management or control. In the short time that I have with you here this morning, I would like to address this single question: whether evidence of mere mid-level distribution is sufficient to satisfy the management or supervision enhancement. I respectfully submit that it is not, and it is not in this case for three reasons. First, this Court's prior decisions have ruled that a mere mid-level distributor in a drug conspiracy does not qualify for a managerial enhancement. Second, the record in this case establishes only that Mr. Fortner sold to others who were also sellers. Looking to Application Note 4 to the sentencing guidelines, there's no evidence that Mr. Fortner recruited others, that he took a larger share of the profits, that he told the sellers who to sell to, for what amount to sell, when to sell, where to sell. The record in this case is simply silent on that point. And third, the guidelines have already addressed Mr. Fortner's role as a distributor through the base-level calculations for the quantities of drugs sold. A separate adjustment for management or supervision must be meant to address something more than the quantities of drugs sold, but nevertheless, the government points to nothing in the record to support Mr. Fortner's status anything other than a mere middleman. First, looking to this Court's prior decisions, I believe Brown is directly on point on all fours here. In that case, there was no evidence, as in Application Note 4, that Brown recruited others, that he took a larger share of the profits, that he told them who to sell to, where to sell. There's a total absence of decision-making or planning evidence in the record. That is the case in this case as well. There is simply no evidence in the record that is sufficient to establish that Mr. Fortner managed or controlled others.
I thought the terminology used by the people who were doing the retail selling was that they were selling for Danny. And is that terminology insufficient? I guess your argument is that it is insufficient, but why should that be so?
That phraseology is in the pre-sentence report, Your Honor. But that sentence or that phrase establishes that others who Mr. Fortner sold to were also sellers, and that they obtained their drugs that they sold from Mr. Fortner. In other words, a simple middleman.
Well, it implies more than that.
And to the extent that it implies that there was some level of control, that implication is simply conclusory, and that's not sufficient to establish control in this case. If you look to Application Note 4, which sets out the indicia of control that courts look to, recruiting others, involved in the planning or decision-making process, taking a larger share of the profits, none of that evidence is in the record. There's simply nothing in the record to establish control in this case.
Well, when you say you work for somebody, what does that imply?
There could be an implication that there is control involved in that, but that is merely conclusory, and that's not enough. The government had ample opportunity to set forth all of the relevant factors, some evidence aside from what was in the pre-sentence report that certain individuals allegedly sold for Mr. Fortner. There's nothing else in the record that the government can point to establish control in this case. I would also point the court to two additional cases of Pagan and Mustard In those two cases, similarly as in this case, the court found that there was no sufficiently reliable evidence of control, looking again to Application Note 4. I think it's telling in the government's response that they cited no authority to rebut these authorities, nor did they cite to any evidence aside from the sold-for language that would establish any control of Mr. Fortner's part on any of these other individuals.
When you talk about control, this is a five or more, isn't it, issue?
That is correct, Your Honor.
There doesn't seem to be any discussion about that, so that's not really the issue as far as you're concerned, is whether, regardless of how many, you didn't control them. Is that your...
That is correct. That is correct. Not here to dispute the fact that there were five or more participants in this, but simply that there's no evidence of control in the record. I see that my time's up, and I'd like to reserve the remainder for rebuttal.
Okay. Mr. Bruce?
May it please the Court, Colin Bruce on behalf of the United States. It's good to be back here again this week. Seems like I'm making almost weekly appearances here. Your Honors, let me clarify something right off the bat. The term used was sold for others. Sold for. It wasn't, as counsel just said, he was supplying others or he sold to others. The other people lower in the criminal activity were working for Fortner. That's sold for. That's the connotation. That's the implication. When you say someone is doing something for you in sort of an employment capacity, that means they're taking directions from you. For example, I'm sure all these fine people to my right do research for the court. They're doing it at the court's direction. They're not simply researching ideas because it would amuse them. The court's giving them directions. They're doing the research. There was no dispute at all raised in the district court level that these people were selling for Fortner. He would give them drugs. They would, in turn, sell them for him. That right there is sufficient. But more importantly...
Was he... you say you'd give them drugs. Did they pay on the spot, or is this a fronting situation, or both, or do we know?
Well, that leads to my next point, Your Honor, which was this issue was not raised at the district court level. The record wasn't fleshed out about this. That wasn't the objection that was raised. They have essentially waived, Mr. Fortner has waived this issue.
So we just assume that they're fronting or that they're...
Well, we have the record showing internal corroboration between a variety of facts in the PSR, including this term sold for. And if you read through the different sections of the PSR, there are a number of factors that are raised which show... how it's all internally consistent. For example, Fortner describes that Anthony Sammons was his supplier. Other individuals in the conspiracy say, yes, Anthony Sammons was Fortner's supplier. There's recorded conversations between one of the covert recorded conversations where one of the Fortner's sellers, person working for Fortner, admits, yes, I'm selling for Fortner. And
well, I think that certainly gives that implication, but it would seem that if there is even a question, wouldn't the government want to prove that as opposed to having them prove it isn't?
First, let me describe it to you this way. Take a look at first what the objection that's raised is. The objection being raised is Sammons is higher up in this criminal activity than Fortner. Ergo, legally, a policy argument being made, the objection being made at the district court is a policy argument, he cannot receive an organized or leader enhancement.
Regardless of what the relationship is between Fortner and the people below him.
Correct. So at that point, the government, the district court, none of us see any need to flesh out the record. The argument is a policy argument being raised. Basically, this is sort of an appeal by ambush. And the idea that somehow that this might have been raised in some broader written objection is ludicrous. Taking the position that you can simply raise an issue in a written objection, not mention a word of it before the district court when the district court's making rulings, and then come back later and say, oh, well, we raised this in a written objection, then we know the court didn't make any findings about it because we didn't talk about it, but now there's error. That's ridiculous. If that was the rule, then any defendant who did not object to every single paragraph and say we object to every single adjustment on every single conceivable grounds would be a fool. Because in an appeal, you could go through and sort of pick and choose what the district court failed to do. That's not what the rule was. If you want to preserve an objection, if you want the district court to make rulings, you have to make the objection. Here, there was a strategic decision by the counsel at the district court level. The decision was, we are not going to get into a factual dispute. And that was a wise decision. The PSR went through a variety of internally corroborating facts. I'll just list them very quickly. Fortner admits Jeremy Beard and Clinton Hayden are selling for him. Jeanette Sherritt tells agents that Rodney Ayton and Clinton Hayden are selling for Fortner. Corroboration number one. A CI admits that Fortner is supplying himself and Clinton Hayden. More corroboration. Showing all this people selling for Fortner. He's got a supervisory
role.
The
guy above Fortner?
Pardon me?
What's the name of the guy above Fortner?
Anthony Sammons.
So Sammons. So it, by saying Fortner instead of Sammons, that's enough to show that they're, that he's controlling them as opposed to Sammons. Sammons apparently only supplies Fortner.
The record we have is that Sammons supplies Fortner, then Fortner in turn, in this criminal activity, supplies people who sell for him. He's not a simple mid-level distributor where he sells them drugs. I know his counsel was very careful to say, oh, he's Fortner sold drugs. That's not what the record says. The record says these people were selling for Fortner, and there was no objection made to that conclusion at the district court level. They never objected to that and said, no, the facts are wrong. At the district court level, they raised a purely legal argument saying since Sammons was the supplier, he's the only person that can receive the organizer leader enhancement. The district court objected that reason that was raised. There was no factual dispute until now, where we don't have a record because it wasn't raised before. That's why they've waived it. Your Honor, I can keep going. There's more internal corroboration showing all this involvement.
Well, they're not worried about the numbers, so it's just a question of whether Fortner is the person who possessed the drugs and those people sold for him, and that implies that, in effect, he was fronting or taking percentage of what they sold, et cetera, as opposed to just say they're on their own, just like he's apparently on his own compared to Simmons or whatever his name is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the district court does not work in an intellectual vacuum. I mean, we all know terms. I'm sure all people on this panel know the terms front and consignment. And if you say someone is simply supplying somebody, that might connote, well, we don't know if you're actually just giving it to them to sell or you're doing it on consignment, it's a front. When you say someone is selling for someone, and that's not disputed, that connotes consignment. That connotes a front, just like Your Honor just used that term. And again, this was not the argument raised below. That's why we're pressing the waiver argument. This is to allow this to proceed basically gives a license for appellees to ambush district courts. You can't just make one general or one specific policy-related argument, then come back and say, well, there's also a factual error. We didn't raise it below or talk about it. Let me also point out on the record that before the district court finally made its findings, it went through first with Mr. Fortner and said, personally, do you have any other objections than what your counsel is raising? He says no. When the district court gets done, here's argument from the government, here's arguments from the defense attorney. Before the court makes its ruling, it again verifies, this one with defense counsel, are those all the arguments? I've addressed all the objections. Yes. The defense counsel at district court doesn't say, oh, no, wait. We also have a separate factual error. We're not saying that there is any consignment here. We're disputing that. The defense counsel tells the court, no, you've addressed all my objections. And Fortner's right there, and he doesn't make any comment either. This is a case where the defendant knows about the contents of the PSR. He knows he can make objections. A strategic decision was made to press one policy issue. And now on appeal, we have a different factual issue and complaints that the district court, unsurprisingly, did not make factual findings. That's a waiver. This court should dismiss the appeal for that ground.
Was there any evidence of Sammons' control?
Of Sammons' control?
Sammons' control.
This record.
Some way where he's knows who all the sellers and he's in charge. I mean, that's I think, their argument. Their argument? That Sammons
controlled or that Fortner controlled?
Sammons. And there's only one controller.
The only evidence is that Sammons was a supplier to Fortner.
Yeah, but I assume what their argument is that Sammons is the guy who's doing the controlling. And Fortner is just a middle guy who's sort of a conduit as opposed
that's
to
the argument here.
Source, huh?
That's the argument.
Yeah, that's what I'm here. Saying. I just wait. Is there any, has Sammons come into the picture other than a guy who sold to Fortner?
No.
About control or organization or knowledge
record.
Or something.
I don't want to say yes because I unfortunately prosecuted Sammons also, and I don't
record
want
to, for that. That's all I want to know.
I don't think there is. I don't think there is.
All right.
I don't want to tell you otherwise. I know Sammons' PSR also in my mind, but I want to make sure I don't tell you the wrong thing.
Okay. Well, maybe Mr. Alba knows. Go ahead.
Well, as far as any questions, I'll return the balance of my time.
Okay. Mr. Alba.
Your Honor, just to address this point of waiver, that argument is just baseless because this argument was forwarded prior to the sentencing report, in response to the sentencing report, at the sentencing hearing, and in Mr. Fortner's allocution. I'll just read one sentence here from his response to the pre-sentence report. Defendant denies that all of these people sold drugs for him. He did not know some of them, and states that he did not control anybody. It's right there. To say that we did not address this issue, did not raise it, there's no foundation. Here, again, in the PSR summary, the probation officer states, Mr. Fortner states that he did not have the ability to control their efforts or direct them in any way. This argument was clearly raised at the district court level. And Mr. Bruce essentially concedes here that the government failed to put forward the evidence and that the district court failed to make the necessary findings. All that we have here is control by implication. And an implication is simply conclusory. There is none of the evidence that's necessary. There is no recruitment. There's no profit sharing. There's no taking a larger cut. None of the necessary evidence to establish any indicia of control is present in this record. That argument was clearly raised below. Mr. Fortner himself raised it in his allocution and said that I did not control these people. These people were independent contractors.
Was there some determination? He says that this whole objective was a policy question about Fortner just being in the middle, and I assume Sammons being the guy who really was in control. Was that your position?
That was one of several positions below. That may have been an emphasized position that Mr. Sammons was a leader. But
was it what?
That Mr. Sammons was the leader.
Yeah.
That may have been one of the issues, but as clearly
well,
set
if,
forth.
If that's the case, if Sammons was the leader, then at least the argument is he's the only one that should be charged with control or managerial, more than five people, et cetera, and not not Fortner, who was just in the middle. Is that an argument here, or is there a changed argument here? That Fortner is, I don't know what, he just didn't even know who he was selling to, just a bunch of independent contractors. No consignment, no fronting.
Yes, Your Honor, I see my time's up.
I know,
up, and I'd
just
like to answer
the question.
The argument that Mr. Sammons was the leader and could be the only person who is sentenced, receives that enhancement is not the argument we're making here, because the Seventh Circuit case law makes clear that more than one person can be a leader. That is not the argument we're making here. It's that based upon the record.
That was an argument being made below, though, wasn't it?
That was one of several, including the argument that we are making here. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. Again, I guess you were appointed, weren't you, Mr. Alba? All right, thanks for taking the assignment and the good work for your client.